from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of February 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. Dave Dickey will be here with the agricultural news for the day. And then another edition of In My Backyard. That comes up during the first 20 minutes of the program. And as we finish up our half hour, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast, not with Pete Levitt today, he's out of the office, but with T-Storm's Mike Tenora at tstorm.net. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media, of course, from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the nearby March soft red winter wheat down 4 cents at $8.59, May at 8.90 down 4, and July at 9.12, 2¾ lower. March lead option hard red in Kansas City down 3¾ at $9.49. From the corn pit back in Chicago, a loss today, $6.62 and a half in the March, down 6¾, May at 6.73¼, 6½ lower. And July corn at $6.78, down 6½ cents. December futures, $5.88 and a half, down 9¼. March soybeans at $14.35 and a half, 8½ lower on the afternoon. May contract at $14.45 and three quarters, down 8¼. July at $14.51, 8¼ lower. And November beans at $13.65 and a half, down 9½ cents. March bean meal at $3.86.40, down 50 cents. March soybean oil at $58.78. down 47. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $108.20, 45 cents higher. The April, though, down 32½ cents at $113.20. March feeder cattle at $125.50, 30 cents lower. The April down 15 at $127.30. And the February lean hogs today at $83.35. Finished down 67½ cents for 100 pounds. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report, posted not long after it airs on the radio stations. That's at willag.org. It is a service of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $90.61 a barrel, down 25 cents. Ethanol at $2.34, just about 5/10 of a cent higher on the day. Natural gas at $4.34 and 4/10, down 8½ cents. Heating oil at $2.76 and 7/10, that's a penny and 3/10 lower. And the gold futures at $1,352.30 an ounce, finished the day up $20.80. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,050, about 8 points higher, and the dollar now at 77.75 is up 0.58 on the afternoon. The CRB index at 341 even, down 2.8. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. They say skies should be sunny, a high near 12 degrees, wind chill values between negative 3 and 2, southwest winds around 8 miles an hour. It's already above the 12 for the afternoon, so we're doing well on the day. Tonight, mostly clear skies, a low of negative 4, wind chill values between negative 8 and negative 18, southwest winds around 10 miles an hour. Friday night, mostly sunny skies, the high on Friday, that is, near 19, wind chill values between negative 8 and 18. And then Friday night, scattered flurries, mostly cloudy, a low around 15, wind chill values between 4 and 9. Saturday, scattered flurries, mostly cloudy, a high near 28, west-southwest winds between 10 and 15, though gust as high as 18. And on Saturday night, scattered flurries, cloudy, a low of just 21 degrees. By the time we get to Sunday, a 30% chance of snow after the noon hour. Cloudy, a high near 29 degrees. And on Sunday night, a chance of snow, cloudy, and a low of 18 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenora of tstorm.net.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, joins us by phone to take a look at what happened in the futures markets on the day. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
How are you today?
Doing just fine.
Well, let's talk about what happened in the futures markets, and maybe you can start with those new highs that we had earlier in the week and what they meant and what they maybe didn't mean.
Well, the new highs say that we continue in our uptrend, especially after we had that little reversal there at the end of the month. I think last week, you can kind of view last week as more of a consolidation corrective phase that usually occurs at the end of the month. And once the month was finished, new buying basically came into the marketplace here. As far as the grains go, the seasonals all pretty well kicked into the upside here first part of the month, and they remain relatively strong as we go through the rest of the month. I think today you have to kind of view as what we call as a counter trend day. I mean, in uptrend markets, you have a tendency of Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays being with the trend, and the trend is higher here. And then Tuesdays and Thursdays are what we call counter trend days, and with the trend being higher, Tuesdays and Thursdays should be more consolidation type, corrective type moves. You can't go up every day, and I think that's kind of where we're at here today in the grains.
And what do you see longer term for both new and old crop corn?
Well, my guess is that with the overall supply-demand balance sheets where they are, and the market is going to stay firm until we get this window of uncertainty of what the 2011 crop is going to look like until that closes. So I guess I got to be generally friendly the market, play a seasonal pattern as we go on into the first part of the growing season. And then we'll probably take 1 week at a time, depending upon how that growing season unfolds, how the spring planting season, whatnot. As I mentioned to Dave this morning, the thing that could be brewing out there that could put a scare in the market is I think that the 30-year bond chart is vulnerable to a 10 to 15-point decline. I think that could create some financial nervousness clear across the complex. And I think if that would happen, that would strengthen the dollar because that means higher interest rates and the dollar would become more favorable as an investment tool if interest rates are on the rise. And then that could maybe create some turbulence clear across the complex, whether it would be commodities or equities.
To what extent do you think? I mean, do we have any measure as to how that would really impact in terms of dollars and cents or just cents?
I don't know if I could give you a quantitative number on that.
Right.
Other than when you have a big move in any one particular market, there's usually ramifications because funds are inter-invested and they may have to liquidate out of one position to find money to meet the margin calls of another position. I think what it says, and I think, you know, if you read some of your business headlines here today, is I think everybody's biting their fingernail thinking that we might be ready for one of these splash crashes where we just have just a big, massive liquidation on everything for a few days, and then it settles down, and then it goes back up again. And I think that's got into some nervousness in the complex here today, I think.
Tell me about the supply and demand. Has rationing taken place anywhere along the lines, do you see?
Well, we don't see anything. I mean, you look at export sales on corn, they've been kind of the dismal spot. The last couple of weeks, we've seen a decent pickup in exports. You look at end-user domestic consumption, there's no sign of any kind of major cutback there. I think the problem with trying to see any kind of cutback. Usually you don't see it at the time. It always explains why the market did what it did when you look backward. But nothing, at least at the forefront. I think the bean guys might begin to get a little nervous with got a pretty good crop coming out of South America, and that's going to begin to kind of be the dominant force in the world export trade. But then on the other hand, I've been watching this new crop corn, new crop soybean, corn-soybean ratio, and the market is indicating that it wants to buy bean acres. I'm not sure I can give you a good explanation at that point, but with all the talk and the need to have 3 or 4 million acre increase in corn plantings, the corn-soybean ratio is sure not indicating that it's too worried about not getting that. It's almost kind of indicating that it's worried about not maybe getting enough soybean acres at the moment.
Do you suppose that's because demand in China has been and looks to be very strong in the future?
It's very strong. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. And as long as that China economy is in the growth stages, you know, China's going to be a big buyer of commodities.
What are you telling producers when they call and they say, what should I do?
Well, I'm in the camp. I know it's maybe simple, but as long as the markets are following an average seasonal pattern, let the trend be your friend. If and when something begins to show up that the markets might be varying out of that average seasonal pattern, well, then maybe you need to do some defensive type moves. If you just feel that you like these prices real well, and you don't want to risk giving this up, I would take a strong look at a minimum price contract. Puts are expensive, but it also tells you that the market does expect to see a lot of volatility from here forward, whether that volatility is to the upside or to the downside remains to be seen. But, you know, I think if you want to put some downside price protection on, probably the insurance policy looks like a pretty good bet this year, where we've got some pretty good prices going for us here. Maybe a good insurance policy will protect a certain amount of that downside price risk. But we all know that insurance doesn't replace marketing. You still have to do a good job of marketing. But I would be more inclined to say the friend is your friend, or the trend is your friend, and just kind of watch the seasonal pattern from here on out.
Thank you so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon.
The 21st annual All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting is sure to attract a crowd. Among those presenting March 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, Murray Wise from Murray Wise Associates, Joe Vaklovic from MF Global, Roy Huckabee from the Lind Group, and Tom Fritz from EFG. Avoid the long registration line by calling 800-528-7980. The cost of the ticket is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. When you register with your major credit card, we'll mail your tickets good for our VIP line. The number to call is 800-528-7980.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. Dave Dickey's here now with today's news.
In agricultural news, the United Nations Food Price Index hit a record in January, and recent weather around the globe could put more pressure on the cost of food. Up for a seventh month in a row, the closely watched Food and Agriculture Organization Food Price Index today touched its highest level since records began in 1990 and topped the peak of 224.1 during the food crisis of 2007-2008. An FAO economist and grains expert says that the new figures clearly show that the upward pressure on world food prices is not abating. World Bank President Robert Zoellick urged global leaders to put food first and wake up to the need to curb increased price volatility. India's efforts to calm inflation by allowing easier imports and restricting exports of key foodstuffs are disappointing farmers who are keen to exploit global high food prices. The cost of food for families in Asia's third largest economy has soared 17% over the last year. India, to augment supplies in the local market, has banned exports of common rice, wheat, and lentils. That is bad news for farmers in India, who argue that the problem is not shortages of production, but poor infrastructure and profit-taking. Kellogg Company says its fourth-quarter net income climbed 7% as the world's biggest cereal maker raised prices to deal with rising ingredient costs. The maker of Frosted Flakes also backed its 2011 earnings outlook. Kellogg earned $189 million, or 51 cents a share, compared with $176 million, or 46 cents per share a year ago. Kellogg still expects 2011 earnings of $3.33 to $3.40 a share. Informa Economics yesterday left its Argentine corn and soybean production estimates unchanged following beneficial rains in the South American country. But in a note, Informa wrote, quote, "Should the soybean area receive normal rainfall over the next 4 to 6 weeks, eventual production could be above the current forecast." Informa also pegged soybean and corn production in Brazil as unchanged from a month ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and of Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all kinds of detailed information about our daily agricultural programming and about our all-day Ag Outlook meeting scheduled for the 8th day of March, 2011. Not very far away. Get your tickets today. Find the number on our website at willag.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring locally grown and organic foods as well as homemade healthy deli meals. More information is available at 352-3347 or at the co-op.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, Illinois is not known for maple syrup. The state output is around 1,800 gallons a year. Compare that with 500,000 gallons in Vermont. But as Lisa Brautz discovers, the sap flows just fine, thank you, in Urbana, in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
A couple of years ago, one of my neighbors, Sam, with some help and encouragement from a few other neighbors, decided it was time for an experiment. It was getting toward the end of winter, the way we're sort of getting toward the end of winter now, and this was his idea. Let's tap as many sugar maple trees in the neighborhood as we can, with permission, of course, and see if we can make some maple syrup. If we have enough, Sam said, we can have a big pancake breakfast in somebody's driveway this spring and invite a bunch of people, and it'll be really cool. The neighborhood, even then, was accustomed to Sam's enthusiasm for projects and experiments, so we watched as Sam tapped the trees volunteered by property owners in the area. We watched for a number of weeks as the clear plastic jugs he'd attached to the trees filled with sap, and we watched as he collected the sap and rolled it back to his house in his daughter's wagon. Some of us took photos of the various steps in this process, and some of us even helped him out from time to time. I think some neighbors sort of thought that when you tap the tree, syrup comes out. It's not what happens, of course. Sap needs to be boiled down to its syrupy goodness, and it takes a lot of sap to make syrup. Those 5-gallon jugs that Sam was hauling back to his house, each one would boil down into about 1/4 quart of syrup. 1/4 quart! That would last, 2 waffle sundaes at my house, max? Syrup making is also not exactly the kind of project you do on your stovetop, either. Sam's house is behind our house, and it seemed like every time I looked out our back door window, Sam was stirring the sap, which he had going in a huge cauldron over a fire in his yard. He was almost completely obscured by huge, billowing clouds of smoke and steam as he stirred. It seemed like a crazy amount of work for so little in return, but really, it was a true labor of love. While Sam gathered sap and boiled it down and bottled it, the rest of the neighborhood waited, mostly patiently, for spring to really show up. And when it did, we had a potluck pancake breakfast, just as Sam had predicted, in our neighbors Ryan and Sarah's driveway. Many people came, friends and neighbors who hadn't seen each other in several months, as well as friends of those friends and people new to the neighborhood. We laid the tables end to end in the driveway, covered them with newspaper, and got down to the business of eating. I loved the reactions to Sam's extremely local homemade syrup and the labels on the bottles. One said 18 gallons of sap, please use mindfully, which isn't something you either read or are asked to do every day in our current culture. Some of the attendees were very tentative tasting the syrup. I mean, Illinois is not known for its maple syrup production, and I'm sure some people thought it might taste weird, but that didn't last long. There were between 30 and 40 very happy maple syrup lovers seated at the tables that day. Sam's experiment was a success, but it wasn't the last we'd heard from him about it. Fast forward to today. Sam's experiment now has new life as the Prairie Sugar Collective. Many of those friends and neighbors who watched Sam's crazy experiment 2 years ago are now working together to make more syrup. You know, it's also kind of funny to me that as big box stores consider reducing the amount of the bad stuff in processed food to make those foods healthier, the Prairie Sugar Collective will be processing a single raw ingredient, sap, down to its essence, syrup. There's nothing to be removed except water because nothing was added in the first place. There are other goals for the group besides the production of syrup, too. The group is about educating anyone who's interested, not just active participants, about the process that goes into transforming our raw material that's available right here, literally in our backyards, into something edible and tasty. It's also about sharing the workload because making syrup is quite labor-intensive, and there are lots of ways to divide up the tasks. I know I'm looking forward to my time in the sugar shack on the chilly days this early spring for sure. But mostly, the Prairie Sugar Collective is about doing something fun and productive as a group during a usually dreary and not-so-productive time of year that comes to a delicious ending right as we're getting our gardens into the ground. So, what'll it be? Waffles or pancakes?
Lisa Brott's stories can also be heard on our website, willag.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com. If you have an idea for In My Backyard, email us at willagstaff@illinois.edu. That's willagstaff@illinois.edu.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, back in just 2 minutes with a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
The 21st annual All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting is sure to attract a crowd. Among those presenting March 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, Murray Wise from Murray Wise Associates, Joe Vaklovic from MF Global, Roy Huckabee from the Lind Group, and Tom Fritz from EFG. Avoid the long registration line by calling 800-528-7980. The cost of the ticket is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. When you register with your major credit card, we'll mail your tickets good for our VIP line. The number to call is 800-528-7980.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media.
It's National Carrot Cake Day. Carrots have been used in sweet cakes since at least the medieval period, at which time sweeteners were relatively scarce. On this day in agricultural history in 1815, the world's first commercial cheese factory was established in Switzerland. By the way, today there are some 450 types of cheese available in Switzerland. In 1823, Spencer Fullerton Braid was born. An American naturalist and zoologist, He was the second secretary of the Smithsonian Institute. By the end of his tenure, the National Museum housed more than 2.5 million specimens and artifacts. In 1862, William Jackson Humphreys was born. An American atmospheric physicist, he applied basic physical laws to explain the optical, electrical, acoustical, and thermal properties of the atmosphere. In 1890, Christophorus Ballet died. A Dutch meteorologist, he is best known for his observation that wind blows at right angles to the atmospheric pressure gradient. And in 1913, the 16th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified. It gave Congress the power to levy taxes on income. In 1913, less than 1% of the population paid income tax at the rate of 1%. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason on the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast from tstorm.net. Mike Tenora. Thanks, Mike, for being with us today. Why don't you give us a postmortem on the big storm across the Midwest first, please?
Well, the big storm is long gone, so that's good news for a lot of people. Right now, what we just have to deal with is getting transportation back to normal. So, once all of that occurs, then everything will start to move across the country again. So this has been a potential problem, and for a lot of agricultural interests, because it's hard to move crops and hogs and cattle and all types of things through the middle of the country when you have something like that happen. But it's all over now, so that storm is gone. And although there is some light snow out there from time to time for the Corn Belt, we won't really have any large storms, so it does look quite a bit better in that regard, though cold temperatures continue, but that shouldn't have a large effect on transportation.
Are you worried about the cold temperatures and snowfall or the blowing snow that may have opened up some fields and allowed the wheat to be open for potential winter kill?
Well, that is definitely a concern. The problem is that over the last couple of days, as the big storm was going through Illinois, very cold air was dumping southward from the Canada prairies through the northern plains and eventually all the way south into the Texas panhandle. Low temperatures this morning were 20 below zero in southeast Colorado, not in the mountains. We're talking about the flat land there where there is wheat. The big problem that happened is that there wasn't a whole lot of snow for the plains as the storm assembled. So as it moved through, you had wheat essentially exposed to the cold weather because temperatures, snowfall was only around 2 inches deep and in many cases a lot less than that. So there definitely is that potential that winter kill occurred, but the crop was dormant, and this is always a dicey situation trying to assess what occurred. We probably won't know for sure for another 6 to 8 weeks once we start to break dormancy.
Turn your attention to South America. Talk to me about the crops there. Harvest season has begun in Brazil.
Yeah, it sure has, and it's been a nice mix of rain and dry weather over the last 3 weeks or so. So harvesting is taking place, and we believe it's taking place at a fairly nice clip. Now, and also not only that, but you head down into Argentina a little further to the south, and they've had some pretty good rains over the last 2 to 3 weeks, which has essentially ended the topsoil dryness problem that was severe heading into mid-January. Now the big question for soybeans is whether or not that improved the crop, stabilized it, or was it just not enough and too late to improve conditions there? Real tough to say, but our guess is that it stabilized crops.
Any place around the globe that we really need to keep track of that we haven't covered just yet?
Right now, we're kind of in the lull between the end of winter and the beginning of spring. The only real concern area is the wheat areas of China, where it's been very dry for the last several months. The only thing about that is that they have a much wetter climate that begins in March and especially April. So dry weather in the winter, although a concern, isn't a major concern, as long as it starts to rain as we expect in March.
Mike, thank you so much for filling in today. We do appreciate it.
You're welcome. Talk to you later.
Mm-hmm. Mike Tenora with tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.